I'd like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Kenny from Las Vegas.
My name is Kenny. I'm an alcoholic. I recently posted a photo on Facebook of me when I was a teenager. Terrified young man. Terrified. And people kept taking pictures of me. And my birthday, my belly button birthday a few weeks ago, they started posting them. And my friend here made a comment. Who would have thought that young man would have been so important to me? And I'm going to tell you how. My first blackout drunk, I was 8 years old. I'm not 100% certain on that number, but I've looked at the other people in the photographs from that time, and it makes the most sense that it's that age. My grandfather was an elected official in the state of Nevada. My father was an appointed official, and I was supposed to be somebody, and I sure was. The 8-year-old blackout. It was a Basque festival in central Nevada, and my dad and some of his friends, and they were similar. My parents, my mom wasn't violent, my father was, and drunk all the time. They lined us a bunch of kids in a circle, Bota bags. Some of you may know what that is. Filled them with port wine, and apparently I won. And the next thing I recall is coming to in a motor lodge called the Idle Inn, and this old woman had a rag on my forehead. I think she was just praying I didn't die in her motor inn, you know. And I came to in the middle of the night, and she smiled, you know, the two teeth, one for gum and one for candy, and she was a sweet old lady though, and she smiled real big, and she ran, and she made the rag cold again and brought it back. And I remember thinking, what would my dad do? Because my dad was drunk like that all the time. And there was a can of beer, and this is, again, from memory, a can of beer on the nightstand. So I reached for it at the age of 8, and I drank it, and I spit out the cigarette butt, and I finished it. Because that's what you do when you feel that way. Things never really improved. And I could relate in parts. I was a realtor for a long time, so mortgage, realty, you know, we need a 15-step program for that. The blessings of having done the steps, getting a higher power, and working with others is that I was asked to change my career, walk away from something lucrative that was my own, work for someone else. And I agreed to, and there's a chance he might take that company national, and he wants me to head it. And that doesn't often happen to people that wake up in the gutter. A lot. Which I did. A lot. I did graduate from high school, but part of the problem with that year, I was a 3.9 something until my senior year, and then I met a 32-year-old guy when I was 16, and things started to change. And we drank a lot, and I barely graduated with a 3.01, which maybe to some people that's a big deal, but I was supposed to be somebody, and now I'm graduating with a high B instead of valedictorian, and that's a problem. I talk about being gay because you need to know whoever you are and whatever little dirty, dark secret you think is just yours, you're not alone. You're not alone. I don't care who you are. Nobody cared who I was, and I really tried to push people away with that, and it didn't work. I'll talk about having AIDS. I've tested positive 25 years ago in August of 86. It hasn't killed me yet, just like alcohol didn't kill me, and I'm not doing a 12-step program from that. I've just decided to live instead of die. I talk about that because at least one other person in this room knows they have it and is terrified to talk about it. So I'm here to show you. You can get up in front, and I'd like to say there's 400 people here, but maybe there's only 150. You can talk about having a disease like that has the stigma like that in front of people like you, And I don't die when I talk about it. I feel empowered because it just is. It doesn't define me. I've had to come out of more closets in my life. And it's okay. I'm okay. That's the best part. I'm more than okay. And I'm not blood related to any of you. The people I'm blood related to aren't bad people, but you're my family, and some of you more than most. I texted people that apparently don't get texts. You know, he was busy doing his abacus. I wanted people to know I was going to be here because you guys make me tell the truth. If it was a bunch of strangers, who knows where this would stop. I did drink alcoholically every time I drank. I stole Boone's Farm from the local 7-Eleven. Threw up every time I finished my own bottle. Knowing you're different in a lot of ways is just a good excuse to stay loaded. And I can remember, I got sober the first, well, not sober, that's funny. I went to my first AA meeting when I was 18. My father, I think it was about his third year, and so he started dragging me to meetings when I was 18. And I used to bring a bottle with me and be drunk before he picked me up. And that's how I'd go to meetings. My solution to my father was to leave the state and not have to go to his meetings anymore. I'm kind of being funny. There were other reasons, but of course there was a man involved. Right? Run far away from the men. Yeah. Anyway. I ended up here at the age of 19, and the party was on, and I was with someone who had enough money to keep the party going, and I lived in Coronado and thought that was it. I was going to start a little Amway business, and that's how old I am. And it didn't work out because I kept not coming home, because I would go out for a drink and end up in, trouble with other people. My sponsor, who's sitting right there, said, he asked me some questions that led me to this idea, and it's not original, but I didn't get arrested every time I drank, but every time I was being questioned by a person in a uniform, I'd been drinking. I'm a proficient liar. But usually it's not to you, it's to me. And then if I buy it, I try to sell it to you. And then when you don't buy it, I'm mad at you because you're telling me I'm an idiot for buying it. I lived in Pathfinders, the full term. I think it's 110 years you have to live there. I didn't want to do it. I was doing my drinking prior to 9/11, and so you could get on a plane in like boxers if you had enough money. You know what I mean? And which I did. I would come to out of a blackout boarding planes, and not really clear how I got there, whose money paid for it. I was always curious to see who I was going to be sitting next to. They're shutting the alcoholic flying down now because you have to, have a passport and be present, But I did a lot of crazy, foolish things. I hated myself more than I could possibly describe. I was short, fat, ugly, stupid, and boring. And then when I drank, I was tall, dark, handsome, funny, and smart. And it turns out I'm kind of funny. Sober. Turns out I'm kind of smart. At least my employers are convinced that I am. I drove today to be here. I left Vegas at 2:20 this morning because someone asked me to come share with a group of alcoholics, and there isn't a better thing to do on a Saturday. There isn't. And I used to think people that said that were losers. who had no life or prospective dates and might as well. It didn't occur. I mean, I've come in the last month. I've been here. This is my third trip. And, you know, 5 hours in, 5 hours out, that wears down your body. And especially when, according to the doctors, you don't have an immune system, which I don't know why they keep saying that, because I'm fine. It didn't even occur to me to come up with a good excuse. It didn't occur to me to try and what I learned in AA, if you can't make a commitment, you get someone else to cover it. None of those things occurred to me. It's like, oh, I better go to bed at 7 so I can get up at 2 so I can drive to California so I can go to that speaker meeting because someone in AA asked me to. And that's such a tremendous honor for someone like me. And the blessing of that, God doesn't let me down ever. And I've tried to really test that. And I texted, again, someone who actually takes texts. And I said, I'm coming. And he's like, cool, come with me to a wedding. And I got to watch a lady marry a guy. And they appear to really like each other. And those of you that married while you were drunk might have had a different experience. But it was just about the coolest way to spend an afternoon on no sleep. Sleep deprived, really, girl, you want to go there? I'll win that fart. And the best part is my best friend on the planet is named Heather. She and I were in trouble together as teens, and I got to stand up with her at her wedding, and she's still, to this day, my soul. And the fact that we knew each other back when, and we still want to know each other now, is a testament to the fact that the steps work, the higher power is busy if you are willing to be willing to be willing, and that people of service find themselves with a lot of free time to have friendships. As I say, I've done all the steps. I did them with that guy. He wasn't very friendly about it. That's my ride. I've learned to not be nice. It's more important to be kind. I deliver the harsh truth when that's what's asked of me. Nice pat on the head, move along. I don't know if that's going to keep anybody sober. When someone asks you, are you effing up? You're allowed to say, yes, you are, and it's only going to get uglier unless you listen to us. We're not here to hurt you. Women stick with women, men stick with men. I was at a meeting, though, in Boston when I was about 2 years sober, where this woman, Sinead O'Connor-ish, with the tattooed bald head and the combat boots with the sundress, got up, and she goes, now remember, you know, men sponsor men, and women sponsor women, and other sponsors other. So I knew I was at home. Some of you may have heard of Ravishing, can I say the whole name? Ron, why not? He doesn't care. And I was afraid when we were driving up here, I was telling the guy I was driving with, that I thought this was going to be a church that I'd been to when I lived in that hospital. I'll backtrack a little bit. 18, going to meetings drunk. Not the easiest way to stay sober. Around 26, I was given the task of helping one of my sisters that had a surgery. And part of that was, you can use my car if you go pick up our younger sister at her dance class. And she's little. I mean, we're all over 40 and she's in her 20s. She's much, much younger than us. And I took that agreement because now I had a car. And so I made a shrink appointment because something was broken. So I was going to work on that. And then go play pool, but just have a beer, and then go pick up my little sister, and then show the family, I'm responsible, I can do this. You can trust me. The ATM receipts show that that's all I did was go to the ATM. But you know how we show up at stuff when we're in blackouts that we're supposed to be at? And I almost drove through, I drove right up to the dance class. And drove over the median, blew a couple tires, scared all these little girls. And I'm a bit of a drama queen, just some. And I ran out into the main street, threw myself on the ground, and thought, please just run over me. I couldn't believe that had just happened. I wanted to die. The dance instructor pulled me out of the street, He ripped a $2,000 leather jacket, and that's all I could focus on. Look what you did to my jacket. Not thank you for saving my life. You either got it or you don't, right? And so he, yeah. But I let my dad assign a sponsor to me the next day. I did all the steps in one day. Seemed efficient. I called the guy that was assigned as my sponsor, who was my dad's friend. So there's no way I was honest and thorough, because he was going to tell my dad. I just knew that. I didn't trust a one of you, so I knew they were going to go have coffee and talk about me. And, again, a little bit of self-centeredness going on. And I, but I did do it. And what's amazing to me, I started calling people, and I called someone and said, while we were engaged in certain behaviors, I knew I had this disease, and I didn't tell you. And he said, I understand why you're calling, because I mentioned the AA part. I don't want to know you, but thank you for calling. I mean, he didn't crawl through the phone and try to kill me. The police didn't show up at the door the next day. I told the truth during an amends, and I didn't die. And no one came to hurt me. So what's sad, though, is that moment of that feeling of that I chased that high, of feeling that way. I'm dialing for dollars at this point. I'm like dialing people. I'm sorry. I'm really, really sorry. You know, but because I wasn't being sincere about it, that feeling never came back. And I thought, well, this doesn't work. So I moved back to California. I've been back and forth between Nevada and California over the last 25 years. And finally, when I was 32 years old, I somehow made it back to Vegas on a plane that I don't recall boarding. My sister and her then fiance were out of town, so I drove their cars around for a while after I think I broke into my sister's house, not real clear on that. And when they got back, I met them at the airport, and I didn't know where the car was parked. I remember a lot of yelling. We found the car. What's the problem? And my sister said, I'm done. This is enough. And I detoxed at her house. And I was probably, because alcohol showed up in a lot of different forms. I'm stealing this from a speaker tape that I heard. It showed up in the something you could snort. Alcohol showed up in something you could smoke. It showed up in a lot of different forms. But I'm blessed that I realize there's just one thing that's my problem, and that's a chemical entering this body to try and change this head. So I don't really care what it looks like. If it's going to change this, I'll just call it alcohol, do the steps, and have a better life for doing those steps. I detoxed at her house. I'm very grand. I'm the grandiose child that some of us are want to be. And I worked for a Fortune 100 company, and I was a fraud investigator partially with that company. And I'm like, I got to cuss out the CFO of Pennzoil, you know. And if you're here, I'm so sorry. I was always somebody. I always had this job, but I would always quit because I knew you were going to find out who I was and fire me anyway. And you were going to embarrass me when you fired me. So I would quit before you could do that to me. So my sister, it's funny because when I got my real estate license a while ago, when we had a market, my sister at about 2 years, she's like, you done? When's this other shoe going to drop? Because no one in my family has watched me stick through anything. Pets, my mother's now raising my cat. And they won't let me have her back because apparently I did some drinking while she was in my care. I did go into treatment. I lived at Vista Pacifica for a couple weeks. And what's sad about that scenario is I had insurance, so they didn't want me to stay. The insurance company called every single day asking them if I was done. Apparently, they bill out for insurance like $35,000, but if you pay cash, it's like $4,000. So I might not have been harassed and asked to leave if I'd written a check rather than just giving them an insurance card. And I'm not bagging on anybody, but damn. So I only lived there a couple weeks, and then they wanted us to go to recovery homes to interview. And I thought there was like a commission thing going on, because I've always been in sales, and so they're going to try and steer us to this one or steer us to that one, so they're on the take, right? And I went to all the different recovery homes, and I go to Pathfinders, and I pull up, and they're manicured lawn and a nice house, and I'm like, I can't afford this, you know, because I went from being able, and have you noticed in AA, like, because when we're out there, men like buy a round for the bar without thinking, and then we get sober and we're poor, and women have another, yeah, women are somewhat more available when they're drunk, and they come here and suddenly they're virginal. Have you noticed that? Has anyone else noticed that? You hear people going, I would never, like, but I saw you do it. So I became really, really cheap and thought, I can't afford this place. They're probably going to want money to be here, you know. And it didn't occur to me that I'd lost my job and I didn't have a savings and my family wasn't really speaking to me at the time, but I wasn't going to give them my money. And blessedly, Stan let me torture him. I wouldn't take off my sunglasses or my hat during the interviews, and he just looked at me and I went from, I don't want to do this, to when they didn't answer the phone when I would call to check in, I would fax them. I'm like, do you have a fax? And they're like, for what? I'm like, I got to get to Pathfinders. And they're like, nobody faxes. I'm like, do you have a fax? I need to do this. Because I became desperate and terrified that if I didn't do that, it was going to get worse. My family's really, really old. I grew up knowing my great great grandmother. She cheated at pickup sticks, just for the record. But I'm blessed. I mean, I knew these old. But on my mother's side of the family, my father's side of the family, unless drinking takes us down, we live past triple digits. Like all of us, I mean, or darn close. I mean, 99, 100, it's crazy. And I knew alcohol wasn't going to kill me. I knew I was going to be that 80-year-old guy on your street that you would, like, be strolling your kids and you'd cross the street and pass my house and come back. You know what I mean? Because you never knew what you were going to get when you got too close to my house. I knew I was, because we had a guy like that next door. Every now and again, Sunday morning, he's out there talking to God, you know, on the lawn with no clothes on, with a sundial. I did that without cussing. Come on. But I knew that was me. I knew I was going to be as terrifying as that guy, and that the kids in the neighborhood would be told, if you're seen near his house, you're on restriction. That was going to be me. And so I hear people say, you know, AA saved my life. AA gave me a life. I was going to be a really scary old guy with a lot of physical problems. And instead, I'm beyond crazy. I'm the happiest person I know. And I've learned to just live life out loud. I don't intentionally try to anymore. I don't intentionally try to get under people's skin, but sometimes I do, and I've had to learn that that's you, not me. What you think of me is none of my business. And I stole that. That's not original. So I end up at Pathfinders, and I hear this guy who's 20 years older than me, which that's always the easiest mark, because dude's 20 years older than you. And he's buying people breakfast on Sunday mornings. And I'm like, God, I haven't had a guy buy me breakfast for a while. So I need to... How do I find out how to get close to this guy? And I'm kind of being funny. I mean, he also said things when he got up to share that spoke to my heart and told me that it was okay to be there. And that somebody might understand, because I knew when I was drinking that nobody understood. Okay. Am I sober yet? And so I went to breakfast with this guy, and I said, "How do I ask you to be my sponsor?" And he said, "You just did." And everything changed. I did all the steps, and I had the blessing of living in a recovery home. And it's not that I say, you know, people have all their opinions about this, that, and the other thing with spin dries, but dude, it saved my life to have that time to let this brain and this ego calm down just enough to get sober. I'm blessed that I made it to the 5-year mark and didn't go out and with some complacency. I looked up the definition of complacency, and I'll just paraphrase. It's smug certainty in the face of imminent danger. Because we say complacency like it's really fluffy and nice, right? Smug certainty. Imminent danger. So the next time someone goes, well, I think I'm a little complacent, run. You know? Or take them with you and go to a meeting. You know, I got into service. I was secretary, leader, you name it, at Pathfinders. Every meeting I went to, I tried to find something. Greeter, you know, I don't think they even really care at any meeting. Stand there and shake hands. If they're like, we have all the commitments filled up, then just be the first one that's there, get closest to the door and go, I am the greeter. You know, what are they going to do, ask you to stop? You know, the greeters never show up anyway. So, or maybe they do if you're here. I'm sorry. It's hard to describe. I mean, I showed up with luggage, you know, into recovery and a watch and a match set. Thank you very little. And I some people implied that I wasn't done because I hadn't lost everything. But what they didn't know is I was so empty inside. I had lost everything. It just wasn't showing you. And I could beat you at cards, and I could talk about the Bible, and I had, you know, little parables I could throw at you to distract you from the fact that I needed you to discipline me with a firm hand and be my friend. Someone posted on Facebook the other day, how do you know that you are a real friend? And I responded with, there's people that I know inside and out that know me inside and out, and we want to know each other anyway. Those are real friends. And then he asked, so then everyone answered that, and then he asked something else like, what would you do for them? And I thought about it because I've done it. I would drive 400 miles and slap some sense into you and then cry with you and then go home. You know, even if it's like 4 o'clock in the morning. It's like being here. I didn't have a choice. It didn't occur to me to not be here. I was asked by Larry during the roundup in March, are you available in September? Sure. I mean, yeah, and I, of course I wrote it down, you know, and here I am because he texted me and emailed me and I hadn't been near a computer all day, but I got the text, so I was able to respond quickly. Luckily he's not my ride, so. And I just said, yeah, you know, yeah. Can you be there? Yeah. Can you be the feature speaker? Yeah. Why? Because that guy told me if I did what I was asked to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, I might have another day without a drink. And it's been true. Good Lord willing and the creek don't rise, 10 days, no, what is it, 11 days? 12 days from now, I'll have 14 years. Yeah. Thank you. And I don't deserve it, and I didn't earn it, and I couldn't have bought it if I had the right amount of money. I have it because I did what you guys told me to do. I have it because I have a higher power, which I will go to that. I lied about my relationship with a higher power. First 5-6 years I was sober. It's Cosmic Carla's fault that I have a higher power. I don't know how many of you know her. I know they do. Yeah. Everybody was saying, I get on my knees in the morning and I get on my knees at night and I pray to higher power. I'm like, oh, me too, me too. Of course I do. And I never did. Not once, ever. I read through Leviticus enough. I was looking for what the fundies were trying to say at the Pride meeting, their Pride festivals and stuff, and I'm like, fundy, 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 and then read Paul. That'll take you out. And I'm reading this stuff and going, this God can't be my God. When I was a little boy, God was 20 stories tall and had the staff and the beard and the light coming from behind the head, so you really couldn't make out the features of the face. Completely unavailable, completely unteachable, unreachable. I mean, just, yeah, that's God, fine. You know, file that, it's a God. And but no relationship. And as I got a little older, you know, when my dad started pulling me to those meetings, those A&Aers, God looked like my dad. God was really pissed off at me, and God was very judgmental and just treated me badly in my perception of how I was being treated, and so God looked like my dad. And then in my 20s, I thought God looked like, my mother raised us alone. Dad split when I was about 7, or 8 years old. And so God was a divorced woman with 3 kids for a long time. Looked just like mom. How could it not be? You know, I mean, in my 20s, I was evolving. I remember being at La Jolla Speakers and seeing a woman welcome a homeless guy. And I thought she was running to the door to kick him out because he looked like he smelled bad. And he probably had a forest of who knows what living in his beard. And she embraced him, you know. And that's God. God's a 62-year-old black woman in a Chanel suit who could stand to lose about 30 pounds. 25. And that's been God ever since. And you know what I loved when I lived here? Because I've been gone now a few years. But we would all meet up at Clair de Lune, no matter what meeting we went to. Didn't matter where we started, we would all land there. And one night, a bunch of guys who would not normally mix started talking about what does God look like. And none of us thought, I don't think, any of us thought that that was weird. We were being friends. I have friends who make me cry a lot. I wasn't respectful towards women as a gay man. I wasn't, because I didn't know how to be. I wasn't respectful towards men, because if you didn't give me what I want when I wanted it, and it needed to be in all the colors that they made it in, I wasn't going to be nice to you either. I wasn't respectful to anybody, because I was never respectful to myself. And today I'm respectful to myself. I have boundaries. First 5 years was about lying about my relationship with God. Cosmic Carla somehow picked up on that and grabbed me at the Live and Let Live Alano Club and said, she's like, come here, kid. And I walked with her, and she said something akin to, I don't know that there is a God, and I don't know that there isn't a God. What I do know is when I imagine God walking with me, I feel safer and a little bit warmer. And I just started crying. I had no idea what it was like to feel safe. None whatsoever. And I went home that night, and I got on my knees before I went to sleep, and I'm like, thank you. And that was my whole prayer, thank you. I didn't know what else to say. I'd had this opinion of God. And from that day to this now, I don't go to bed without praying, and I don't wake up without praying. And you know, sometimes you're like falling asleep, and you can feel that that's like the last like real like thought, and you know you're out, and then you're like, I didn't pray. I usually say, G-D it, I didn't pray. And hi. And but I do, to myself, because my God has a foul mouth. My God has my back in bar fights. I mean, clearly, I'm 5'7½". I'm a bit prissy. And I never got beat up in straight bars. God was doing that. It wasn't me. Imagine me coming up to your man, hitting on him. Women could have killed me, right? And it never happened. So my God wins bar fights. My God has the same foul mouth that I do. My God is everything that I need to be a better man. I stopped being a boy and I became a man because of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have character defects that are not ruling my day anymore because of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have friendships. I can't emphasize that enough. I have people that are my heart who, if they needed me, whether it was 400 miles, I have a friend that recently moved out of the country. If she called and said, you're the only one that can help, I would do everything I could to get there. I was an embarrassment to my family. Again, I was supposed to be somebody who might end up in a newspaper article now and again, or who knows what, because of where I come from and who they are. And they didn't really want me around, or at least I felt that. My great-grandmother died, and my mom called and said, will you write the eulogy? And then when I wrote it and I sent it, she said, will you come and will you deliver the eulogy? These people aren't supposed to like me because I took money from all of them. And I lied to them about how I felt about them, all of them, my whole family. And they said, we need you to come honor your grandmother. And it has to be you. And I went. And I have that gift. I have those blessings because I've stopped lying moment to moment. Now it's like once a week. I'm not going to pretend. I am so not well. But I'm so much better than I was. And again, I gave up what I thought was a lucrative career. I gave up my position in that society. I was on the top three producing teams nationally. We're moving 5 and 10 and $28 million properties. And I still think I'm a failure and a loser. They're going to find out who I really am and they're going to fire me. And then they start giving me keys to $10 million houses to bring other agents to show the house. And they trust me with the alarm codes. And in the midst of everything, the last thing I'll wrap with is I've started to really address my health. Not that it was ever bad, but I was really not being a responsible adult by not addressing it. Two years and 1 month ago, I thought, I wonder what running marathons feels like. My sister's been running them for a while, and so I... Vegas in July, you know, I waited until midnight, and I ran 3 miles and walked home, and I didn't die. So I mentioned it to a few of my family members, and I have 2 days anymore, and it's not the age thing, it's the spotlight thing. I went from wanting the spotlight to go do your stuff, you know, and they bought me running shoes and clothes and the Garmin and the, you know, all the stuff, right? And I've completed 2 marathons since. And I improved my time on the second marathon. And now I'm going to go to Spain in October to run with my friends that were just stationed there with their jobs. And then I'm going to come back and do the Vegas nighttime marathon. I mean, I get to physically feel what it feels like to be physically present. I'm 13-plus years sober, and I'm just finding out what my body's capable of. And then it turns out what my spirit's capable of. I need to move back here because this is my home. Even though I was raised and born and blood related to other people, this is where I am most safe. And I mentioned that to my friend while I was running. When you run next to someone 3 days a week, 2 hours every run, you know, the nice stuff and the, you know, how many brothers do you have? You know, that's like in the first week. And then, because we're running like 30, 40 miles a week. And so you really get to know each other. And that's the guy that hired me, the guy that I run with, knows everything that makes me mad. He knows everything that makes me happy. He knows me, and he hired me anyway. And he overheard me last month saying, I need to be where I'm safe. And 2 weeks ago, he said, what's it going to cost you to be there? And I said, well, I could probably rent a room in a friend's house and, you know, for X number of dollars. And he says, well, I'll just increase your pay. Because he wants me to feel safe. And if your employer does that for you, you might not have to leave in 2 years. I'm blessed beyond blessings. I have a God that has never tied my feet and driven off with my face going like that in the dirt behind a truck. Well, that'd be funny, right? The Chanel suit in a truck. But I have everything. Yes, sir. I have everything. Well, here. When I was, again, it's his fault. He said, write down the perfect relationship, the perfect apartment, the perfect job. And the perfect job was to be an executive assistant to a giant in industry. That was my loftiest goal, the best I would ever be. I would have been finished, peaked, done, could do that until I retire. I was going to be someone with the giants of industry could stand on my shoulders because I would make them look good. I have communication skills. I have this. I have that. My loftiest goal was to be an assistant. And when real estate was at its heyday, I had 2 assistants that I paid for and 3 and 4, depending on the week, others that my broker provided me. I went from my loftiest goal being to be the assistant to employing assistants. Because I kept doing what you guys told me to do, which is, you know, do the steps, work with others, have a higher power, don't drink in between. And I didn't. And alcohol hasn't shown up in any other forms either. And I haven't been to any other group, and I'm not putting them down. I just haven't needed to. I feel so, and I, oh, another funny thing though. I did, and I'll stop, but I thought I didn't smoke. And turns out when I went into a blackout, I started stealing your cigarettes and smoking them. And I didn't know this. And so I've had a bit of an opinion about smokers for a while. And boy, they better just pull it together just like AA and do something about that, because don't they know? And my ex, the last relationship I had when I was a drunk, and God bless him, he still wants to know me. We're friends today because I made a full amends to him. I was saying I don't smoke, and he said, yeah, you do. And I'm like, no, I don't. And he goes, yeah, you do. And I'm like, but I can't be this standing on a soapbox guy if I can't. And he's like, well, then you need to stop, because apparently, you know, he, and that was his trigger, though. He knew that I was in a blackout. As soon as he saw me, like, get up close to you at the bar and start reaching around you for your cigarette, oh, we need to leave. Because that meant I was in a blackout. It turns out I'm, yeah, everything that I've decided is wrong with you. Yeah. It's really broken with me. Thank you for asking me to come. The newcomers, the young people, holy guacamole, what are you, 12? The courage, she does not want to be standing here. Does not want to be standing in front of this many people, and she's doing it. And she'll probably not get drunk tonight because she has the courage to take suggestions from those that came before her. I seriously, you're my inspiration right now. You are, because you're doing something you don't want to do to stay sober. And that's why I'm sober. Thank you very much.